see the fun. I see the fun. The Diary of Jack Kirkman Podcast.
Test, test. Hello, hello. Welcome to I Seem Fun, the Diary of Jen Kirkman podcast, episode 23. That's right. Brooklyn. Brooklyn, I will be there on November 7th. Taping my first live podcast. Who'd have thought I'd do it? Who'd have thought I'd do it back where I used to live? Yeah, there's 20 podcasts, but I've never done mine live. So come see it at the Bell House, at the Bell House, at the Bell House, at the Bell House, at the Bell House. Welcome back. I'm podcasting live. There will be a bed because I'm gonna have one. And they can't even remember the lyrics to something I'm improvising. What a great song. I love when theme songs were actually songs you could listen to in your car. Yeah, we tease him a lot, buddy. Something. Okay. The Welcome Back, Kotter theme song used to, like, make my heart hurt when I was little. I didn't know about melancholy yet. Oh, what? You know, the first time you hear a harmonica when you're a kid, you don't know yet that sometimes everything doesn't feel happy. What is she talking about? Anyway, in case you couldn't make it through that song, welcome back, those of you who fast-forwarded through the singing. I don't like when she sings. I don't like when she comments on the commenters. Just fuck the haters and move on. I don't like anything about her podcast that is what she intended it to be. So I'm going to write a letter and tell her how to do it. I will be in Brooklyn taping a live episode of I Seem Fun, the Diary of Jen Kirkman podcast. I was supposed to be in New Jersey on business in November. It got postponed. I already had booked the Bell House gig. I thought, do I cancel it? Or do I just go to New York now? Because tickets have been on sale. And fulfill my commitment. So I am coming to you for this. I can't wait. It's going to be fun. When I did my book tour, the Bell House was nearly sold out of lovely people who came to see me do stand-up. So if you come back, you will not see a repeat show. You will get a whole new show from me, an improvised hour of talking and podcasting. Your laugh will be caught on tape. I will interact with audience members instead of reading emails at the end of the show. I mean, it'll be on tape as part of the show. I am very excited. It's going to be fun. Yes, I will be getting an arrow bed that day, setting it up on stage. I'm in bed right now. I will be in bed on stage in my monogrammed J. Crew men's pajamas. Okay? It's an old-fashioned slumber party. Okay. Oh, my God. Someone said something to me the other day, like, oh, did you live in Brooklyn because it was cool? I'm like, it wasn't cool when I lived there, you dorks. It was 1999, 2000, 2001. I mean, I guess it was. It was like, it was getting cooler just as I was leaving. Williamsburg was becoming the place where all the hipster people were. But I mean, the Brooklyn now that is on girls, I mean, those girls were teenagers. Someone's ringing my doorbell. I think it's FedEx. I'm not getting up. Okay. They can leave it outside the door if it's important. You probably didn't even hear my doorbell ring, and you're like, I don't know what she's talking about. But what's funny is I did always want to live in Brooklyn because I was such a fan of Welcome Back, Kotter as a kid. Now, I didn't realize back then that it was in repeats when I was watching it. I didn't understand that the shows on at 7 and 7:30 were repeats. I don't know how I didn't understand that, because I would watch 5 episodes a week. And I don't think I was thinking about the production schedule and how they would put out 5 episodes a week. I wasn't thinking that. These were simpler times. You just turned on the TV and whatever was on, you got into. And as a result, you had a lot of diverse kids out there, kids who liked the Lawrence Welk show. Nowadays, if you don't want to see a German guy hosting a polka show, you don't have to. In my day, you had to. I grew to love the weirdest things. Anyway, Welcome Back, Kotter was one of my favorite shows. And I think I was always a sensitive little soul. I think I was lived an exaggerated point of view of what I actually lived. You know, I've talked before, my family was of the working class. I think I thought that I was the same class as the Sweat Hogs, who lived in one room apartments with their entire families in Brooklyn. That was definitely a step below what I was. But in my mind, with all the little rich kids I went to school with who lived in, this is even pre-McMansions, people. This is back when if you had money, you lived in a real mansion with tennis courts and all that kind of stuff. Stuff that you don't even know yet people can have in their private yard. Stuff that you're like, wait, is that a public park? No, Jen, they have tennis courts and a swimming pool in their yard. And I'm not allowed to go in there for $5? No, it's they own it. What? So I thought I was like a sweat hog. I thought I was like one of those broke people struggling, making it. And I used to just get this rush of emotion when I would watch Welcome Back, Kotter, and hearing that theme song say, Brooklyn, was it 12th largest city in America? The sign said, I couldn't remember, but I just remember thinking, I want to live there. Look at all the people struggling and buying fruit on the street and walking, and their laundry is hanging outside and outside the window. They don't even have a yard. I mean, we hung our laundry outside too, but we hung it on a clothesline. I just thought it was so glamorous. It was like, if we're going to be sort of not rich, let's just go balls out broke. And they always made it seem, I'm so grateful that I grew up on TV shows that made the working class person seem, literally, not to quote John Lennon and act like I don't know that's a song, but like a hero. Like Mr. Kotter is a hero. He came back to where he was from to teach these knuckleheads. Judd Hirsch is Alex Rieger. Just wants to be a cab driver, has no problem sitting there giving advice to all of his friends that he works with. There was an episode of Welcome Back, Kotter, where I think Mr. Kotter's friends from high school were coming to visit, and he was nervous because they're very wealthy, and he didn't think his home could compare because he lived in a room with his anorexic wife, Julie. And so then they would just have to have like a pull-out bed from the couch every night. And I used to think that was so cozy. When I have a relationship, I want to live in one room too. And now I'm like, oh my God, I would live in a separate house. Like even just, you know, I get very upset about pooping situations. Even just for that alone, how do you keep the romance up when you share a room? Anyway, so in this episode, Mr. Kotter was very nervous that his old friends were visiting, and he tried to make his place look nice, and they came in and they were like, you know, he was like, let me give you the tour. And I loved rich people on 70s sitcoms about class. They always sounded like a black comics impersonation of a white cop. They were just like, oh, well, I'd like the tour of the place. I guess this is the place. And like, oh, darling. I don't, that's not a cop, but that's the woman always sounded like Mrs. Howell. Like, oh, like everyone was so put off by like small apartments, like, oh, and then the sweat hogs started coming in through the window, and then the rich people started breaking down and having a fight amongst themselves, and you realize their relationship sucked and that Mr. Cotter was surrounded by love, and it made it look way cooler to be broke. Now I realize the dream is to have all the money and have the creative friends and the love. But if you had to pick one, you know you'd pick living in one room and having really cool people with awesome jean jackets and afros crawl in your window. You're going to turn away Vinnie Barbarino crawling in your window, man or woman who lives in that apartment? I don't think so. Now, if John Travolta climbed in my window, I'd be terrified. I'd be terrified, and he wouldn't fit through the window. I feel like if John Travolta took his head and leaned it forward and put the top of his head on a white wall and then stepped back, it would be like a stamp. There would just be a black ink mark on your white wall from where his hair is literally painted on. Man, that's one of those things where it's like, what if you got to marry your childhood crush? Because mine was Vinnie Barbarino. And now I'd be looking at him like, oh, you possibly gay chubba wub with painted hair. What became of you? Where are the bell bottoms? Where's that naturally feathered, wavy, long hair? Where are the dance moves? Anyway, that's my point. I'm excited about Brooklyn. Now, I made some notes for myself about this podcast. That's right. I give it a thought or two. I give it a thought or two. So, was in Bloomington, Indiana last week. Now, last week's podcast was a call to arms because I didn't think anyone was coming. The shows were very full, all five of them. And they were full of the most wonderful people. I actually was touched on more than one occasion. A lot of fathers and daughters were there. It was very interesting. What I've noticed is there was a 71-year-old man who was there with his daughter, who I think she was about my age. And he was having a great time. Now, my act isn't dirty for no reason. I might mention sex here or there, a little masturbation joke here and there, but it's mature. It's for adults. It's certainly nothing that younger teenagers haven't heard, but it might be a little bit like they don't want to laugh in front of their parents. You know, that laughing sometimes means I understand, or I've been through that. You don't want your parents to know. So I love when I see older people because they've been through it, everything. They're not easily offended. They're not still hanging so hard onto their ideals, whether it be political or what they believe about marriage, that they can't enjoy entertainment in a different point of view. They might even laugh and disagree. Not that there's something to agree or disagree with. It's just my take on the world. And this guy was so great. And I asked him, he had a wedding ring on, where his wife was. And he said, she passed away. I'm a widow. The audience, oh, they get so nervous. He was laughing. He was fine. So I kept making jokes with him about his wife and explaining to the audience that we all have to learn how to handle death, that he's fine with it, I'm fine with it. The rest of the audience has to be cool. And I just could tell this guy was cool. And I talked to him after and he's like, I love female comedians. And he reminded me a lot of my dad. And it was just this touching moment. And he was just so sweet that I felt like I was holding tears back when I was talking to him. And that happens to me a lot when I talk to people after shows, but I just don't let on that I feel like I'm going to cry sometimes from the humanity of the humans in front of me. And I'm not trying to sound overly dramatic or what, but And I know it's weird because I stop at going out to drinks with the audience, but that's just me and my road schedule. And I don't like to drink after midnight and it's insomnia. And I do work when I'm on the road, so I get up early to write. It's not what I do, even if my best friend was with me. So stopping short of going out with people, when I talk to people after the show, or even just during it, when I look at what we're all laughing at, and when I look at all the different people in the audience, it really fills me with love a lot of times. And I felt kind of lovey-dovey this weekend in Bloomington. I also had raging PMS, which sometimes manifests in angry, 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 and sometimes manifests in, oh my God, I'm so consumed with love, where I turn into like a Rumi the poet for a day. But who's Rumi the poet? Oh, he's a Sufi poet from, what is Sufi? Is that the thing that Dane Cook did with his fingers? No. Rumi is a, I don't know how to explain him. He's a poet, but a lot of his stuff had a very spiritual bent to it. He was a seeker. He was, a Middle Eastern guy, born near, Afghanistan, the Genghis Khan era. He was kind of a leader. He had this like life changing consciousness turnover. Anyway, but I don't mean to sound like a Rumi poem. So he was in the Taliban? No, honey, Afghanistan is not the Taliban. It's just a region of the world. And in the 1200s, there wasn't a Taliban. The 1200s? What do you mean? You know, like the year 1200? Was that before or after dubstep? Okay, sweetie, I got to go, but thank you for checking in with me. Oh, I actually have a Rumi book in my hand, and I just turned to one of his poems. See, I'm kind of a hippie dip, but this poem is called A Pilgrimage to a Person. I swear I just opened to this. When you are not with close friends, you are not in the presence. It is sad to leave the people you travel with. How much more so those who remind you of God hurry back to the ones protecting you. On every trip, have only one objective, to meet those who are friends inside the presence. Okay, so see, I met friends this weekend. I met just beautiful people. I don't have to, go to their baby shower or anything, but just nice people that come up and say really nice things. Stuff that isn't just a compliment for my ego, but I do one of the dumber things for a living, whether it's through my writing or through stand-up, which is just making silly jokes. And when people say that they relate or they like it, it really, really warms my heart. And so I love doing a show and giving it my all. I really take it seriously. And then having people say that they appreciated it is really all I need. It is very fulfilling. So anyway, this old man was super lovely. And I just love that he loves female comics. And he and his daughter were laughing and all the craziness. But there were other dads there that were like probably maybe 10 years older than me, maybe 48. And they had daughters at Indiana University, which is the college in the town of Bloomington that I was performing in. So they were there with their daughters. And they were a little more... I don't think they were mad or anything. I think they enjoyed it, but they had a little more stiff faces. They had a little more, my doorbell is ringing again, but I cannot get up. I am committed to sitting in this bed and podcasting, and I can't pause, so I'd have to get up and make whatever's at the door part of this podcast. Do you want me to do it? Fine, I'll get up, but this better not be some weird fucking neighbor. Did I order something? Hang on one sec. Oh my God. I just looked out my peephole. It was not FedEx. I knew it wasn't because FedEx always I just shut my bedroom door. FedEx always just leaves the box outside the door. It's my neighbor, Andy. Remember that guy across the hall I told you about? I just saw him through my peephole and I just tiptoed away. He was walking away as I tiptoed away. Why is he ringing my bell? I also, like, the other day I saw him walking down the street with, like, a walker. Like, I think he has a limp or something. I don't know what's going on. I still can't tell if he's gay or straight. I just know that every time I run into him, I'm running down the hall, like, with a suitcase. One day, it was a Friday. I was bringing a change of clothes because I had to film a sketch at work. And I was running down the hall with clothes. And I had all these bags. And a lot of it was I was bringing my dry cleaning somewhere. And he was, like, coming at me down the hall. He goes, there she is. He goes, you must be going clubbing tonight. And those are your outfits. I'm like, no. It's like, don't surmise anything about me. Is that a word? Suppose anything about me. Going to a club. If you only fucking knew me, buddy. But I want you to get to know me. But don't assume. It's so insulting as a woman who might look a little young for her age. I'm sorry. To be going down the hall. And because she has all this stuff in her hands, someone thinks I'm going to a club. I was actually going to a network meeting, honey. And I brought my computer because I'm writing on a project and going to a job. And then dropping off dry cleaning because I had a trip to go on. I'm going to a club. Just save your little what you think girls do at night. I'm not some dumbass. Yeah, I'm real tough here behind my bedroom door, not saying that to his face. Why is he ringing my bell? Oh, it aggravates me that, like, any neighbor would just try to get in my business. I might write my building manager and say, I don't even know. I want to tell on him. I just want to go, what's Andy's deal? Like, do you find him to be stable? Like, why did you rent the apartment across from me to someone? I don't understand. I mean, he obviously knows I'm home because he probably heard me singing along to Welcome Back, Kotter. I don't know how much sound travels through into the hallway. Ugh. Anyway, what the fuck was I talking about? Rumi. Oh, the fathers. Yeah, so some of the dads looked a little more stiff. Like, I don't like this stuff. And that's because I know people in their 40s. They're very uptight about their beliefs. It's like, if in any way I say something that might let you down or that might not be appropriate in that moment, that's where they stop and they don't want to go into someone else's point of view to at least find the laugh. They're just like, is this appropriate? And it's like, if you go to a comedy show with that attitude, maybe comedy isn't for you. Now, I'm not complaining. Nobody didn't laugh and nobody was, it's just an expression on the face. There's a little more pensiveness to a guy in his 40s than the warm face of someone in their 70s who's just like, their face is just sliding off at that point. They're just happy to be sitting there. But I found it very odd. A father and daughter comedy show outing. I was disheartened. I have a joke about being a cougar for one night. I went on a date with a 20-year-old when I was divorced at 37. And a few 21-year-old guys in the front row, I mean, they look like babies. I thought they were like five. They were like, ew. And I'm like, no. It's not like I have some like gray beard in my pants and like a claw, you know, I mean, it's not ew actually. Like, yeah, I might not have like a bony inner thigh area like a 21-year-old girl does, but trust me, I saw the 21-year-old girls. They're wearing sweatpants. I wear a nice leather pant and a blouse and cool jewelry and I look fine. So don't give me ew. I'm trying to look up this story I saw about, it was so disturbing. Okay, here it is. Speaking of father-daughter. And it's a video that the family made. They put it online. This father is on his deathbed in a hospital, but he's wearing a suit. He looks like he's in a coffin, but he's on his deathbed. He's got a tube going into his throat. He's in a suit, got a flower pinned to his suit. He's gravely ill. His name is Johnny. And his 10-year-old daughter comes in. I can't pronounce her name. Nakiol. I can't tell the nationality. But he looks almost like Italian or Mexican. She's like a little blonde girl. She actually looks nothing like her parents. Like, they are clearly Mexican and she is blonde. Like, very white and very blonde. But, okay. So, the family is gathered around and his little daughter walks in appropriating a wedding. She's in a wedding white dress with a big bouquet. Because the father will not live to see the wedding day. According to the YouTube description of the video, he is suffering from chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. The little girl felt sad knowing he would never be there to walk her down the aisle when she gets married one day. So the family arranged a small ceremony at the father's hospital bed. Okay. Totally sad. Just moving. Just so sweet and forward thinking of the daughter to even be thinking about her future and what she would want. And it's beautiful. But then, once she gets closer to her father, who's dying in his hospital bed, she promises him that she won't have sex till she's married. So the abstinence pledge is a thing that happens, like people do these ceremonies with their fathers all the time. It's like, but usually it's like their fathers are accompanying them to a school dance and they're a little older and, but a 10-year-old on her father's deathbed, like we're so uptight about sex and virginity that we're actually having what I think is a more awkward conversation than, I don't know. I mean, just imagine one of the last things you're saying to your dad is, hey, picture me as a fully realized sexual being, but now picture me not doing that. But try to not get out of your head the part where I'm talking about how I'm not having sex, because now all you'll be picturing is me having sex. But let's talk about sex, Dad. Like, a 10-year-old is worried about, now what kind of guilt is going to be on her head when she changes her mind in, you know, 6-7 years and wants to lose her virginity, and maybe this will haunt her forever, or maybe it won't, I don't know. But just the type of thing that, like, your father is leaving the planet. And to this family, they thought the most appropriate last thing to talk about would be what she's going to do with her vagina and if she will be legally contractually obligated to someone when she decides to do something with it. Wouldn't you talk about, you know, Dad, I was reading this beautiful poem about the afterlife, or Dad, thank you for all you've taught me, or Dad, I promise that I'm going to someday name my son after you or have a husband like you. I mean, you can talk about the future, but when it just boils down to, Dad, I'm not going to have sex until I'm married. I'm still going to have sex. Oh, don't worry, Dad. I'm going to get banged on my wedding night from the front, from the back. I mean, Dad, when you think about the pent up sexual energy between me and this man that I marry, who I know is going to beg me for it before we even get married. But I mean, I don't know. I mean, we'll probably, Dad, you know what? We'll probably do oral. You know, I don't want to promise too much. I think Dad, are you still there? Are you still breathing? Okay, good. I think, you know, maybe we'll just do, like a little oral and a little touching over the pants. But I think we'll save penetration for my wedding night. Now, Dad, I promise you I won't do anal sex until we've been married 20 years. I mean, what weirdness is that? I've never talked to my parents about that. Even if I was going to say to my dad when I was young, Dad, I'm not having sex, he'd be like, get out of here with Dad. He doesn't want to hear that. Because the minute you say you're not having sex, they're still picturing sex. It's just, don't talk about it. Unless you're going to talk to your kids about birth control. And, you know, don't get diseases and don't treat women badly and don't treat yourself badly and it's okay to be gay. I mean, all that sex talk is great. Ugh. And a 2008 study found that young people who take abstinence pledges are just as likely to have premarital sex And they're using less birth control when they do so. So, that's it. But anyway, yeah, I just thought of that video this weekend when I saw so many dads and their daughters in the audience. I was just like, whoa. Anyway, so my whole point about seeing people in the audience and just feeling overcome with love and humanity, it's amazing to me that every time I feel that way, I forget that I am a human made of complex emotions and that this little love cloud I'm on after a show or just after having a particularly good experience among a great community, not only of comedians, but of the people who made up this town or any town I'm in, that it can immediately be broken the minute I leave that bubble. And the whole point is to carry that feeling inside of us as we go out into reality. Not everything is a small college town on a, you know, unseasonably warm weekend. So then I get on the airplane the next day and I'm in the, not first class, but you pay a little more to get the, you know, legroom seats, which I don't even know if it's proven, the legroom, but I believe them. So, you know, I paid my extra $27. I'm on the aisle. It's just a 2-hour flight, but to my next flight. And this woman gets on and she has a baby. And the baby doesn't have a baby, like, car seat. It's just she's going to hold it in her lap. And she's in the middle seat. So she's right next to me with the baby. Now, I got up at 4:30 a.m. that morning to catch a flight. And my shows ended at 1 a.m. the night before. So I got about 3 hours sleep. And I planned to sleep on the plane, had to get back to L.A. early so I could do some work. So I knew, you know, that I'm taking a risk by only getting 3 hours sleep. I know that I might not end up sleeping on the plane, but it's something I'd try to do, right? So once I saw the baby smack right next to me, as babies are only right next to me on the flights I take that are red eyes or flights where I get up at 4 a.m. and need to sleep in the morning. That's the only time babies are on planes. So I'm like, well, this is going to be a disaster. So then the father of the baby comes down the aisle on the plane and he's looking at the ticket. I guess it's people who don't travel a lot. They look at the ticket and they look where you're sitting and they look at where their partner is sitting. And they're like, oh, we're not next to each other. Like, didn't you get that when you bought the tickets and you picked the seats out? Or even if you couldn't choose the seat when you saw the, do you think that they're, I don't know. So he's in a middle seat across the aisle from me. And he's a big guy and he's next to two big guys. And I think, well, I'm a tiny lady. I can sit in the middle seat between the two big guys. I have no medical needs to be on an aisle and it saves me from being near the baby. So I said, are you with her and the baby? And he said, yeah. And I said, why don't you take my seat? I'll go sit in the middle seat that you were going to have. He literally just looks at me and goes, okay. And the mom looks at me and goes, like, just looks at me and goes, okay. Like, not even thank you. No, thank you. Not a thank you. Like, the world is made for me to move over for your baby. You gotta thank me when I do something like that. Because I paid extra for that seat and part of it was the aisle. So I get up, I go in the middle seat. The guy next to me, the older guy, goes, that was really nice of you. And I go, I mean, it's for selfish reasons. I wanted to not sit next to a baby. He goes, that was still really nice. I go, well, thanks. At this point now, an older person's talking to me. I'm not full of love anymore. I'm just like, stop talking. I'm tired. He goes, so are you going back to LA? It's like, no, I'm not. I'm on this plane so I can go to Ireland. Am I on the wrong plane? Like, yeah, yes. Going back home to LA. I guess he was asking, do you live in LA or whatever? But no. No need with the conversation. It was 6:30 in the morning. Then the guy next to me keeps pulling the shade up during the flight. I'm like, you realize the sun is rising right next to us. There's the sun. I know we're not near the sun when we're on a plane, but you get what I'm saying. It's a little stronger when you're in the sky. I'm like, are you monitoring something? Do you need to look out the window? What are you looking for? So I was actually, don't know what was worse because the baby didn't really end up crying that much. And I had the guy next to me who kept asking questions and the guy next to me on the other side who kept opening the shades. But luckily there's headphones and eye masks and I put those on. And if I could put a blanket over my head, I would. I mean, I guess that nothing is stopping me, but so I was full of suddenly not so full of humanity. And then I get off the plane and I go to my connecting flight and I have 10 minutes to get to it. And it's at the Dallas-Fort Worth airport, which if you're not familiar is, I think, the biggest airport in the world. It's the size of the entire state of Texas. So I actually had to get on a tram to catch my connecting flight. And I'm on the escalator and there's this woman just standing in the middle of it. She's not standing to the left or to the right, just standing. I go, excuse me, connecting flight. And she just turns around and looks at me like I'm disturbing her. And I'm like, excuse me, because she had her suitcase next to her. So she had to move unless I was going to jump over it up some stairs. So she never moved. And I just kept standing behind her going, I can't fucking believe you're not moving. How's that for a spiritual leader? Night before, crying my eyes out, bonding with an old man, going, life is beautiful. And now I'm like, I can't fucking believe you're not moving. Like if somebody was like, Jen, you could push her and watch her face get sucked under the escalator until it's flat and ribbed. I'd be like, okay. And I wouldn't feel bad about it. I'd feel nothing, like a sociopath. How do I go from that to that in less than 12 hours? This is why someone like me needs to have a roomy book by their bed, needs to do yoga, meditation, because I'm an angry fool. It's not peaceful people that seek out more peace. It's disturbed people. So anyway, but I make my flight and all was well with the world. But then when I got to Indiana, this is backtracking, I'm always confused by, I noticed the Midwest-ish, and I call everything the Midwest that isn't like the North or the blatant North and the East or West, but the middle parts, I'm always like, I remember when I was in Oklahoma, I did a gig, come to Oklahoma. I did a show last year and I had an hour to get ready and to eat. And I just landed, got to the hotel, had to be at the show in an hour, 15 minutes. So I had to shower, put my makeup on. So I got in the room and I ordered dinner, but it was so Midwest-y. There was only like meat on the menu and I don't eat meat. So I had to order off the kids menu and get like a peanut butter and jelly sandwich and some French fries. Like that was my only hope. So I called down and the room service woman was like, how come you're just getting peanut butter and French fries? And I was like, well, I don't eat meat. And she's like, well, I think you should come down to the restaurant. I think you should, there's more choices down here. You can eat it down here. That would be, why won't you have a nice dinner down in the restaurant? I was like, well, no, I'm in town on business and I have to go to my job in an hour. She goes, oh, then you need something heartier than peanut butter and jelly, honey. Maybe just a nice chicken. I said, I don't eat meat. She goes, but it's chicken. I'm like, that's meat. Oh, well, I think you need something more substantial. I'm like, well, okay. As someone who didn't have a very budding in mother telling her what to do every second, I really don't take well to this. I'm like, shut up. Just, should I go down there and make my own, whatever the hell I was saying, peanut butter and jelly, grilled cheese. I don't even know what it was, grilled cheese or something. So then I get dressed, you know, I take a shower. I answer the door with my hair in a towel. Need to put my makeup on. Now I got like 25 minutes left to eat, get everything ready. It's actually the woman that answered the phone downstairs that's delivering it to me. She's like, are you sure you don't want something else? We've got a great meatloaf. I'm like, oh, just shut up. Just shut up. So then this time when I landed in Indiana, I had gotten up again, 4 a.m. in LA to get to the airport. drive to the airport, get to the plane. I decide not to buy a bottle of water at the airport. I decide I'll drink my water on the plane. I don't feel like carrying one more thing. Of course, I pass out, completely fall asleep on the flight. I wake up, we've landed. There's no, I missed out on the water. Now I've got to run to a connecting flight. I get on that plane. Same thing happens. I pass out, fall asleep, miss the whole drink cart service. So now it's been like 9 hours and maybe like eight, and I haven't had any water at all. And I've been in the sky twice. Very dehydrated. I get off the plane. I see this huge bottle of Fiji water. I go to buy it. The woman at the kiosk or whatever it is in Indiana goes, that's $5. And I'm like, okay. I thought she was like telling me how much it was so I could pay her. She goes, do you want that? It's $5. I'm like, well, I have $5. But I guess sometimes people just, I don't really do this. Like, unless it's a huge purchase, like $800 for a car would be a good deal. $800 for a pair of pants, I'm not going to pay that. But when we're talking about increments less than 10, I don't put a huge value on like $5 is too much for a big thing of water. Listen, if I'm in the middle of something and I've just been on a plane and I need water, it's $5. All right, I'm taking it in the butt. Here's $5. I needed a big thing of water. I had an hour drive. Like, just give me the damn water. And then I was worried. I looked like some rich bitch rolling into town. Like, $5? I'd pay 20 if I could. I know the government's shut down. Some people are out of work. There's a recession. There's a depression. I get it. But I just don't like when people are so nice that I almost feel like I'm supposed to just walk away and not have the water. Admittedly, the most boring story I've ever told. So then, okay, wait. So then one more thing. So then I'm at the airport. After the baby and the people that didn't say thank you, the guy opening the shade, the woman who almost made me miss my connecting flight. Before all that, when I'm just in the airport by myself, before my first flight, my first whiff of feeling the love of humanity dripping out of me was when I went to this restaurant. I had 30 minutes to eat. I figured I am the only one in here. Surely I can get some scrambled eggs and toast, eat it, pay for it in less than 30 minutes. Almost not at the Indianapolis airport. I go to the counter. There's a counter there for to-go and then the restaurant. But I thought it just looked like you ordered at the counter and then maybe brought it to your table. So I order at the counter. She goes, is this to go? I go, no, actually, it's for here. She goes, oh, well, then you have to sit down and get waited on. I go, oh, I'm so sorry. I will sit down. Now, I'm literally the only one in the restaurant. That woman at the counter and then another waitress are the only people there. So the woman at the counter now knows that I want scrambled eggs and toast. Tells me I went about it wrong, which I did, and then I need to go sit down at the table. No problem. So I go sit down at the table. And she comes over and puts a menu in front of me. And I go, oh, no, I already know what I want. And she walks away. I'm like, does she not remember that I just ordered from her? Like, could she maybe not tell the waitress, hey, that girl wants scrambled eggs and toast. So then the waitress comes over, brings a water and goes, I'll give you a few minutes and runs off. I go, no, I know what I want. Now I have 20 minutes left. And I'm like, this is not going well. So I have to go up to the waitress and say, I'm so sorry. I actually already placed an order with her. I'm assuming you guys put it in already. Is that why you're not coming by to take my order? She's like, no, we didn't know. We thought you were still reading the menu. Menu was closed and on the other side of the table. I basically was like holding my arm out with the menu in it. Like, no. So she comes over. I say I'd like scrambled eggs and toast. She goes, that comes with bacon. I said, but I don't eat bacon, so no, thank you. I'll just have the scrambled eggs and toast. She goes, but then you still have to pay the same price. I go, okay, that's fine. I'll pay whatever. I just don't want the bacon. Well, you should get what you pay for. Do you want extra toast? I go, no, I do not want 4 pieces of toast. I'm fine. Eggs and toast is plenty of food. She goes, well, I just don't know how much the bacon is, so I don't know how to take it off as a discount. Let me ask my boss. I go, I just need the eggs and toast. I have a flight in 15 minutes, like boarding starts. She's like, oh, okay. And looked shocked. Like, I'm like, you know you're in an airport, right? You know that ain't no one coming here at 6 a.m. because they want to have a leisurely breakfast where you can ask your manager about the code for bacon and I can eat four pieces of toast. Like, with a quickness is how I would like this to go. So then when she came by, I go, can I get the check too? She goes, don't you want to see if you want dessert after? I go, I don't care if I wanted all the dessert in the world. I don't care if my nickname was Cupcake Magoo. I have to get on a plane now in 6 minutes. Can you just bring the check? I'll pay for it. It's like she had never seen anyone in a hurry before. That story doesn't have an ending, except I gave her a good tip. And I got out of there and got on my flight. I'd like to give a shout out to some girls that worked at a store I forget the name at in Bloomington. Ooh, ooh. I bought a shirt. I was like, I'm going to pack light and I'm only going to bring two shirts. And then I spilled something on one of them and I had to go buy a shirt. And again, it was with so much niceness. These girls were like, what are you doing shopping today? What kind of day is it for you? Do you want this vest to go with the shirt? And I was like, no. I was like, I'm just traveling. I can't bring a lot of stuff in my suitcase. I spilled something. I just need a shirt. Oh, why are you traveling? Oh, I'm in town in business. What's your business? And I was like, you know, I'm not going to lie. The comedy club is right next door. And I go, oh, I'm a comedian. Oh my God. I said, yeah, I'm performing at the comedy attic next door. Oh my God. I've heard about that place. So you're just like trying it out. And I was like, trying out the comedy attic. I was like, yeah, I mean, I've heard great things about it. It is my first time performing there. They go, but you're trying out comedy for the first time. I go, no, I go, it's a job that you wouldn't fly somewhere unless you're getting paid and put up. Like, no. Like, I mean, I guess people really don't know how comedy works, but nobody ever asks me how it works. They just like ask questions that are leading that tell me what they think how it works. And then when I try to answer, somehow I always end up looking like more of a loser than I am. And they're like, well, that's good. So you're having comedy shows and so like, it was just this weird thing. And they're like, well, you got to start somewhere. I'm like, it's not a bad place. Like, what do you mean? And I'm sure if I said I'm on Chelsea Lately, they would have been like, I love that show, but they wouldn't have recognized me from it because no one ever does. But so then I just said, you should come. It's a really fun place. And even if I'm not performing, like if you like comedy, as they said, I love comedy. I said, you'll love it. You'll, you know, go to this place. And one of the girls goes, what's your name? I said, Jen Kirkman. She goes, Jen Goodman? I said, no, Kirkman. And then I gave her my card, which also had my name on it. And then she hands me my bag and she goes, I'm going to look for your name in lights someday, Jen Goodman. And I'm like, ugh. Well, I hope. And now she's going to think that I've never made it because Jen Goodman's name, unless that is a comic I don't know of, is not going to be in lights. But yeah, my love for humanity, it's so strong or it's so low. Oh, let's give up our love for humanity right now. Boxcar Books in Bloomington, Indiana, they were the people that sold my books at the show last week and they were amazing. And they also do a thing called Pages for Prison. I think they donate books to people in prison. So I don't know if that's a national program, but it sounded pretty cool. I have an affinity for helping people in prison. I'm part of many little things here and there that help people get off death row who are innocent and mothers who have who are in prison because of crimes that I don't want to get into it, but that their kids need Christmas presents and all that kind of stuff. So prison's one of my things I care about. But see, but then I'll lose my humanity again and get so angry at this girl I know on Facebook who suddenly got really conservative. Now, I don't mean like Republican. I don't want people to think when I'm saying conservative, I mean Republican or conservative financially or whatever. I don't care about political parties because I think they're all a joke. But I'm talking conservative, like, I guess I should just say like more restrictive thinking. Like, she's a Jesus freak who truly doesn't like anything that Jesus taught. But I put that thing, you know, those prisoners, I think they're in some kind of like, is it like a Bangkok prison or it's not Bangkok, but it's, I think it's a Filipino prison in the Philippines. And these prisoners go out into the yard and they learn like the Thriller dance routine. And it's pretty goddamn amazing. Like even one of the guys dresses up like the woman in the Thriller video. And like, so there's like the Michael Jackson-y person and the woman, and then the rest of the prisoners and the zombies. The dancing's incredible. And I got to assume that these people are in there for rape and murder and robbery and whatever. And I'm not saying like, hey, I'd love to get these guys out early and have a drink with them. Like, I know they need to be rehabilitated. At the very least, they need to be kept off the streets and from harming other people. Like, there are some people that are just, they're just sociopathic and they can't live in society. But there's still a human soul in there. There's still something in there that craves and perhaps deserves to feel good. And I think, I'm not saying dance is going to make them suddenly go, I no longer have a taste for taking someone's life in my hands, but it can't be a negative thing to dance, right? It can't be anything but better for you than sitting in your room or siding with a gang or whatever. I'm sure all that's going on at the same time as the dancing, but I'm just saying it brought joy to my heart to watch prisoners have some freedom to dance. I think dance is a beautiful thing. And I put it on my Facebook wall, and then my friend who got all conservative was like, prisoners should be in jail thinking about what they did wrong. They should not be allowed to dance. This is horrible. This is not what Jesus meant when he said forgive. It's like, first of all, don't talk about Jesus. It's embarrassing. Don't talk about Jesus on Facebook. Don't bring your small town views to literally a spiritual question, which is who deserves what? At the very least, can we all admit we don't know who deserves anything? It's just some prisoners dancing to Thriller. They're not coming after you and your shitty kids. Just calm down. How dare you put this on Facebook? I mean, what are you, anyone who's a parent and your kids are home with you and you're on Facebook a lot, God help your children. They're worse off than if they were with me. Anyway. Oh, speaking of dancing, okay, I have to admit, I'm kind of a sucker for the new Britney Spears song. Now, here's the thing. I know it's awful. It's like not even music. We could argue that Madonna is actually a good singer and that her music is at least pop and that people are playing instruments or electronic things that simulate instruments. Britney's song is what I call air raid signal music. And it's like a little out of style. Like I think Work Bitch seems a little like 90s, but I can't get enough. I don't know why. I root for Britney Spears and all of her medications. I'm glad she got better. I'm glad she's under a conservatorship. God bless her English accent. You better work, bitch. Listen, this song has a message. If you want to have a mansion, look fancy, a hot body, you better work, bitch. Now get to work, bitch. And I like the outfits in this video. I heard that her body is digitally enhanced in this video because she didn't quite lose all the weight. I'm all for that too. Let her eat her Cheetos. She doesn't want to lose the weight for the video. Can't computers do that? Wouldn't you love that? Listen, if we're going to have air raid signal music, let's have inspirational air raid signal music that isn't about going to the club. It's like, you know what? I don't know what work she's doing exactly. She's just dancing with a bunch of Asian women in leather in a desert. But somehow I think the message is if you want a fancy car, live in a mansion, free time to party in Paris, you better work. Get to work. I don't know what jobs they're doing. But I like it. I like it better than Miley and her. We're taking ecstasy and partying all night long. If we're going to have silly air raid signal music, I'm all for this. And I think I'm just an old lady. I'm into my 90s pop stars. You know, Britney was probably the last pop star that got under my radar. Like I grew up liking Madonna and George Michael. I don't like Britney Spears music as a rule. I was too much of a grown up at that point. But I appreciate her. She's got that. She's more on the Madonna end of things to me than the Miley. And I appreciate it. That's all I wanted to say. So I have one exception to my air raid signal music. Listen, I need things to do on the treadmill. Don't think I don't make up elaborate, you know, I think it comes from having taken jazz dance all my life since I was a kid. And whenever the hit pop song was of the year, is what we would rehearse to. And I was, you know, by the time I was 14, I was all in my fake punk, goth, whatever I thought I was phase. And so I was only listening to the Smiths and the Cure, but my little outlet would be going to jazz class and you'd have like a pop song and I would be into that song for like that year. And then we'd work on our dance to it and I'd put my little heart into it. I worked, bitch. So now when I hear like the hot pop song of the day, I'm on the treadmill, I make up dances in my head to it. So sue me. You can't work out to Joy Division. You can't always hang on to who you are every second of the day. I feel like whoever you are on the treadmill, that's a whole different person. That's this like other weird side of you. People who bring their treadmill self into the real world are the boring ones, but we can have secret treadmill selves, right? Once the sneakers and the sweatpants are on, what are you going to do? Read an intelligent book and listen to smart music? That's where it's time to get dumb. Throw a magazine on, anything to get through it. Songs that are like, work, bitch. It's just like, yes, put me in a trance. I don't want to think about what I'm doing. I was walking down the street in Bloomington and a guy yelled at me, Jen Kirkman, I love you. My wife and I came to see your show last night. My wife didn't think you were funny at first, but you won her over. And I was like, you don't have to tell me the first part. I don't need to know that your shitty wife had some, how could she even know what my comedy is? What, she's a 5-minute clip on the internet? She's that dumb that she thinks that's what someone's 1-hour act is? Your wife sounds, and he wasn't even with his wife. He was with it. So it's like, how much fun is your wife that you can't hang out with her 2 nights in a row? I don't care that I won her over. The fact that she came in with that shit attitude, she'll never win me over. And I know people don't complain, and though it's a nice compliment he was giving you. Listen, if I took that as a compliment, I wouldn't be a comedian because my mind doesn't work that way. I'm not like, she didn't like it. Wait, she did? Oh, wait, she ended up liking it? Oh, okay, that's good. No, I got to focus on how you screamed at me in the street that someone didn't like me, and then I won him over. Now all I can think about is what did I do to make her not like me? But now I'm realizing that's her own issue. I don't like that girl. She has hair extensions. Well, you can get them too, honey. That's the closest I'll ever get to say someone's jealous. Oh, speaking of music that doesn't go with what you're doing. Getting onto the plane, they're playing Elliott Smith music on American Airlines. I thought that was so, I don't know, I guess it's not that weird. Maybe it's keeping people nice and calm. But man, it was making me sad. And then I saw a woman holding a Joel Osteen book. Now, listen, nothing wrong with him. But whenever I see someone reading one of his books, I just want to climb into their head and just see what's in there. I feel like wrapping paper is in there. All right. Have we talked enough about stupid things? This was a little disjointed this week, but that's okay. It's a diary. This is literally the thoughts that have gone through my head this week. I have another thing I'm doing in New York when I'm there this weekend, that weekend of November 7th. But I can't quite say yet because I might not do it. It's not my own show. It's just this like thing I might appear at. So I'll keep you posted, but I hope everyone can come to the Brooklyn, Bell House in Brooklyn on November 7th. I'm just doing one show. It's on jenkirkman.com. Go to tour dates. The tickets are already on sale. I hope you buy lots of tickets in advance and tell all your friends. Also, my book tour is over for 2013. I will not be going anywhere else. But starting to finalize things for 2014. And it looks like I am all set for Denver, Colorado. Not in the city proper, but in the suburbs outside of it at Comedy Works Landmark. I'll be there January 24th and 25th. It's Friday and Saturday night doing 4 shows, selling and signing books and saying hello and giving hugs and taking pictures after every show. And tickets are on sale already. So you can go to my website, jenkirkman.com, tour dates, scroll down, it's there. That'll be a nice little thing. Maybe a Christmas gift for somebody. Okay, yeah, I'm hoping those shows do really well. So that's that, you guys. A lot of exciting things to announce that I can't announce yet. I'm working on writing something that you will read in a year and a half, maybe. But I think what you should do is buy my book, I Can Barely Take Care of Myself, a book I already wrote, which is, you can go to my website. Actually, you can get it through a lot of indie bookstores. You can obviously just go to Amazon and get it. There's a Kindle edition. There's an audiobook edition. But go to my website, jenkirkman.com/book, and all the different ways to get it are there. I hope you buy it. There's not a lot of recycled jokes from my act in it. It's totally different than the podcast, so you will get new stories. It has a touching aspect to it. There's a lot of family stories. I think there's a lot of heart. It's about how I don't have children. I think you will like it. Even if you're a mom, a lot of moms have written me that they love it and that other moms can suck it. So thank you, moms who are on my side. Of course, I'm a big fan of moms because I have one. All right. Giving myself an asthma attack again. So I'm going to go deal with that. Hopefully my neighbor doesn't ring the bell. I can always not answer it. I'm a grown up. What does he want though? Like, what is he possibly going to tell me? Oh, can't take it. Can't take it. I want to go put my trash in the trash chute, but I don't want to open the door because I'm afraid he's listening at his door for when my door opens. Hi, Jen, want to have some wine? Of course I want to have wine. I always want to have wine, but I can't. And not with you. I mean, I can have wine, but it's not what I was planning on doing today. Like, anyone who rings a doorbell expecting someone to be free to do something, like, what kind of person would that be that's free? What kind of person with nothing to do with that? I don't relate to that. My day is scheduled minute to minute with 8 hours to spare, and those are my sleeping hours. Every day is like that, even weekends. I am no fun. But something tells me my neighbor Andy is less fun. Okay. I think I've plugged everything. I feel like I'm missing something, people. Oh, if you go to iTunes and give my podcast 5 stars, that helps with something, I forget what. And then if you want to write a review, just put like a quote from this week. You can put Andy doesn't seem fun as your review. How about that? Or you can put my treadmill self listens to and then tell me your favorite song. I don't know, whatever you want to do. I like when the reviews make no sense. That way when people write negative reviews, it stands out as like really weird. I think she should get a co-host and then also convert. Okay. You guys, I will always love you. Let's embrace our loving sides of humanity. Let's not be angry airport people out in the world. Let's be loving Rumi-esque poets when we're out in the world, right? Do you think there's one more poem I can find to leave us on a happy note? Oh, I found a good Mark Twain quote. I think you guys will like this. If I can find it. Hang on one sec. Something about worrying or something. Hang on. Ah, okay. Here it is. Oh, blah, blah, blah. Ah, it's not that. Wait, hang on one sec. Hang on. I'm going to find it. I'm going to find it. Ah, I love this quote by Mark Twain. I've had a lot of worries in my life, most of which never happened. Ah, isn't that a good one? That's a good one. Let's carry that into our life this week. I like how I preach to you guys about what you should do, but I'm like, yeah, I was telling someone to fuck off on an escalator. That's how it is. All right. Until next week, love your neighbor. Well, unless they're Andy, and have fun.